Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas, my good pal and co-host Chef Terry Rotrow, under the weather today, so we're going to go on without him. Hope he feels better soon. Let's see, there's so much to talk about today. We're excited to be here. We're at the Hot Stove here in downtown Seattle at 4th and Virginia, right above Lola Restaurant in the Andra Hotel. We have a large show planned. Madeline, our producer, has been very busy trying to set up things. Maddie, things are crazy out there.
Things are crazy. People are busy. But you know what? I think that people want to talk about all things food and beverage and coffee. And we've been getting a lot of good questions through Facebook. And I think the holidays are warming up to the idea of staying in.
You know, we had Sam Spillman on a couple of weeks back from Cafe Vita. She's the world champion barista and was giving some home tips on espresso making. And apparently we had lots of questions after her time on, so we're going to talk to her again today. It's the season for delicious winter salads. I have been making some radicchio salads because Jackie harvested all, my wife Jackie, by the way, who's going to be on the show later. Yeah. She harvested all of her late greens, her escaroles and radicchios and things like that. And so I've been having a ball doing that. It's Feast Polenta time. And it's probably too late once you hear this show to get in on this deal. But I got to tell you, our polenta is so good. We have our weekly box series that comes up. Like, I think we serve Wednesday night through Sunday. Yep. And you just go to TomDouglas.com and you can see our weekly box series. This week has been polenta. I ordered it twice for myself.
It's delicious.
It is really good. And you know what really killed me was how good the picture was.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
that was a very nice job. Let's see. Rosie Mays of iHeart Recipes is here with a few words on her favorite Southern recipes for the holidays. We'll chat with cookbook author Carly Knowles about the power of nutrition-dense whole foods in her new book, The Nutritionist's Kitchen. And she's going to stick around and probably kick my butt in Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. I know, Madeline, you like to stack the deck against me. Are you going to do that again today?
Absolutely.
You don't even know this person.
I know, but I've
known you for 30 years. You don't even know this person.
I know, but I'm going to be in her court. We have lots of good questions on whole foods, nutrients, all the stuff that I'm sure you're an expert on.
Yeah. You're sure. That's great. It is so fun to think back over the week. One of the things that I do when I get ready for the radio show is I think about all the good taste that I've had over the week. And I got to tell you, I did a couple of things this week that I will say were old favorites, which I like to do. I mean, when I go to Thai Tung, I have my same dish every time, right? I have the fish with Chinese greens and garlic sauce and with a little bit of sambal, spicy chili on the side. And that's what I have every time. So I went over to Sumei's Uptown China. Mm. After doing one of my classes here at the Hot Stove this week. And what I love about this dish is, number one, shrimp. You know, you can put shrimp pretty much any way for me, and I have a feeling for shrimp.
A soft spot,
yeah. And, you know, Terry and I go out after the radio show when we were taping over at Cairo on East Lake there. We used to go out for trashy shrimp all the time, which was a coconut shrimp with that super sweet Thai chili garlic sauce. It's more like eating straight sugar. And I go to Sumei's. It was actually last night. And they're closed for indoor dining. And I was concerned about my favorite dish there, which is a sesame fried prawn. And what I like about it is it's trashy, good, you know, sweet, a lot of sesame seed prawns. But it comes on a mountain of fresh steamed broccoli.
Yum.
No sauce, no nothing, just literally been blanched quickly in hot water. And I love broccoli. To me, broccoli is like the Roto-Rooter of your system. But I actually like it. And I know some people just hate broccoli. Wasn't it George Bush Sr., I think, that refused to eat broccoli when he was in the White House and got made a big deal of? But I love broccoli. So I was concerned that these kind of cornstarch fried shrimp with sesame sauce would get too soggy in a to-go container.
Sure.
But I did it anyway.
And how was it?
Well, they had clipped the corners of my to-go container so the steam could be released.
Oh, professionals.
Which was, I mean, we're talking pros here. It was good. I mean, they were in my car for 30 minutes before I had them. And they were a little bit soggy, but they were much better than they would have been if they hadn't done that to the to-go container. But the best part was the broccoli. Do you like broccoli?
I love broccoli.
Just a big pile of steamed broccoli. And because It was a to-go order. They left the sauce in a container on the side, so I could put as much sauce. Sometimes that sauce is a little sweet for me, and so I could just put the little bit of sauce that I wanted or no sauce on the broccoli and just a little. I'm a big fan of that Bonash Hatch chili sauce.
Yum.
Just pop that on my steamed broccoli. That, to me, is I feel like $1 million when I eat that kind of food.
That's delicious.
Why don't I do it more often?
One of the most requested items we get is that charred broccoli salad from Cantina Lena.
Yeah.
People really miss that salad, and it's been hard for us to do out in Ballard, but I think people want to bring it back. It's just delicious, that salty, crispy broccoli, the cheese. I know it's a lot of stuff for you compared to just steamed broccoli, but it's
well,
delicious.
That is. I mean, if we were to just, I mean, I love that salad. Obviously, it's in one of our restaurants. If we were to just stop at five ingredients, that would be better for me. But there is something absolving about broccoli. You feel like you can do a lot of bad stuff, and then you eat a plate of broccoli, and you feel much better about life, yourself, your sins, everything. Broccoli covers a lot of sins. That charred broccoli, you know, the hardest thing to get people to make that salad correctly is I put a cast iron pan on the stove, and I get it medium hot. And then I slice the broccoli through the head so that I have a flat side of the broccoli. It's not the best when it's just little florets, because then just the edge of the floweret chars instead of the whole stalk. So I slice it through, get a flat side, not too much oil, just a little bit of neutral oil, and then you have to let it burn.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to look at it, you're going to say, oh, my God, that's burnt when it's done. And you don't let it burn. You let it get really brown and let it get charred and have the patience. And believe me, once it sits for 30 seconds to a minute after you've charred it and everything's wilts just a little bit from the heat, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And you'll taste that burnt part or what, you know, you're thinking is burnt, and you'll taste that it's actually just caramelized sugars from the natural sugars in the broccoli. And that it is so delicious. Squeeze a lemon over that, a little chili powder, whatever it is that you want to finish that with. We put on a little vinaigrette on top, a little cheesy vinaigrette on top of it.
Pickled red onions bring
pickled
out that
red
bright acidity. It's delicious.
And let's not forget my wife's very favorite ingredient. We top it with corn nuts.
Mm.
Crunchy corn nuts. Mm-hmm. Sean's over here like, you guys are weird. You just spent 7 minutes talking about broccoli. But I'm a fan. What do I have to say? Mm-hmm. If you're going to watch us on Facebook Live, we're struggling a little bit with our coverage this morning. Not our fault, Facebook's fault. But if you do get to tune in, you'll see a huge ham in front of me, and I'm really happy about it. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more.
I think Mark Zuckerberg might be a vegetarian. He's not letting us stream.
He's not letting us show our ham.
Because of the ham.
All right, up next, Sam Spielman's going to be here from Cafe Vita. We'll talk about some easy homebrewing tips and tricks for our listeners and the best gadgets to buy on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. Tom Douglas here. My pal Terry is off for today. We are going to continue without him and try and make him proud. It is time to talk to Sam Spielman. She's the barista world champion who is now at Cafe Vita, and we're going to talk to her a little bit about home brews and how to make the best coffee when you wake up in the morning. And for me, over the years, I have made pour over, like through a Melitta style filter, for the last close to 40 years. Get up every morning, turn the pot on low, check out my emails. After 45 minutes, my water is simmering, not boiling. I make my coffee. I grind my coffee and make it. So when Sam was on a couple of weeks ago, she surprised me with a type of grinder that I had never used before. So I'm going to have her explain when we get her on the air to tell me about this burr grinder. Sean, do we have Sam?
You know, I was telling Tom earlier that clearly Seattle is a coffee town, because after your segment, we had so much feedback for people wanting to know about the grinder and your tips for homebrew. And, you know, I think one segment was just not enough. So we were thrilled to welcome you back on the air. And I know Tom has a lot of good questions for you.
As always. Hi, Sam.
I love it. I'm so ready. Hi. It's nice to meet you over the air.
Over the air, exactly.
Yeah,
tell us about
exactly.
Tell us about your background and the job you do every day, and then we'll get into some of my questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So you heard Tom. I'm the 2019 U.S. Barista Champion, and I am Director of Coffee for Cafe Vita. So I help choose coffees that we bring in as our offerings, and then really just focus on quality all the way to how we serve it to our guests that come into our cafes. Essentially, I just get to nerd out on coffee every day. So it's kind of my dream.
So while we were chatting the last time, you brought up a couple of things. And I've told you before that I'm a pour-over guy, and that you suggested that I should be using a burr grinder. And I bought, so I went in online, I looked at all these burr grinders, and they ranged anywhere from $49, I would say, all the way up to $300. And then, of course, they go up into the thousands, too. They're more commercial. Mm-hmm. But for the home person, they went up to about $300. So I bought one of each. I bought a $59 burr grinder. I can't remember the name of it. And I bought off of Amazon. And I bought a $300 one off of Nordstrom's site. And
is that the Fellows?
Okay.
The Fellows, yeah.
Because that's what Guile, our listener who listened to the show, she was the one who sent
that
email.
She sent me the email and said, yeah, that they had bought this. Now, I'd like you to do two things. One is maybe save me some money. I haven't opened the one from Nordstrom yet. I have tried the one from the other brand that I bought, and it tasted a little bit like metal shavings to me. And so I should have used it a couple of times or ran some coffee through it before I made coffee the first time. So tell us about these conical burr grinders and why they make better coffee than, say, my classic Krups grinder.
Yeah, absolutely. So what the burr grinders do, so when we are brewing coffee, all we're doing is dissolving different components. So the coffee dissolves in three stages, sour, sweet, to bitter. I'm going to try not to get too nerdy with this.
Oh, no, get nerdy.
I love to dive into the science. Okay, cool. Coffee dissolving in three stages, sour, sweet, to bitter. We're trying to bring out as much sweetness as possible. Now, what affects how fast the coffee dissolves through those stages is the grind size, like how big your actual coffee grinds are. So if you're using a grinder and it's a low quality grinder, not to throw them under the bus, but like blade grinders, like the ones that you shake, that sound, it will always be in my head from when my dad grinds coffee in the morning.
That's what I use.
And you like shake it, that really crazy noise. And that is not ideal. A burr grinder, what it does is it creates a more consistent grind size. So when we're adding water to the coffee, no matter how we're brewing, whether we're using a pour over, espresso, whatever way you want to brew, it's important that we have a consistent grind size, because in that way, all the grounds are dissolving at the same rate. So a burr grinder is going to help you achieve that. It's one of those things that you can't really see the difference, but you can taste the difference.
Uh-huh. Well, I did notice that when I went through the burr grinder, like when I use my Krups, like the blade grinder, you know, I'm a pretty thorough grinder. I like a very fine grind because I like, a little bit more of an intense coffee. And so when I do that, I tend to get everything close to the same size. But I do know when I watch other people do it, you might see some whole beans, some crushed beans, and some fine beans in the Melita after you poured the water through. The conical burr grinder, everything is exactly the same. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're grinding so fine, with those blade grinders, that's the only way to get a consistent grind, because the margins get smaller and smaller and smaller as you get finer and finer and finer.
And so I guess I was expecting you to say that there is some magical chemical component that comes out of the coffee when you're smelling it or tasting it by grinding it through a burr grinder compared to any other way.
Not necessarily. It comes down to what happens with the water and the coffee when you have the more consistent grind size.
Mm-hmm.
That water, it can only pull so much flavor. So when you have a consistent grind size, at least you're getting consistent components that are being pulled from the coffee.
Okay.
The reason why coffee dissolves into the sour, sweet, bitter is the more acidy components dissolve quicker than the more organic components that cause the bitterness. So those are if you want to get sciencey, it's just those different components dissolve, have different solubility rates.
Interesting. And so does that change depending on how dark the coffee is roasted? Because, you know, to me, the darker the coffee, the easier it is to grind, and the lighter the coffee, it's the more tough it is still.
Tom, I have to say, you're asking really good questions. So the darker the roast, the less sweetness you're going to be able to pull from it. You want something that's going to really have highlight the coffee itself. So really just finding a good coffee that's roasted really well to highlight the innate flavors of the coffee versus the darkness of the roast. Like, you want to caramelize the marshmallow, not completely char the marshmallow. You want that golden marshmallow. Same kind of idea. And I said this last time I was on here, but feel free to check out our coffees at Cafe Vida. Our roasters do such a good job of doing that. Visit our website, cafevida.com. We have a holiday blend, a Costa Rican, which is fun, light, fruity, kind of adventurous, lots of options. So I would definitely suggest trying those out.
You sent me those, and that was lovely to try them all against each other. Now, can you also get the burr grinder of your choice, your favorite one, at your website?
We are working on that. We are going through and revamping our offerings online, but soon, very, very soon.
So then I would suggest, I went on Amazon. I like to use their kind of compare function on all the different burr grinders, and I read everyone's reviews. And frankly, you know, a lot of them got very good scores, all the way from the $49 or $59 ones all the way up to the $300 ones. And really the difference that I could find was the quality of the casing. Some are aluminum, some are plastic. Yeah, but the steel grinders are pretty much the same. So
yeah, for sure. And the Virtuoso grinders are great grinders too.
Okay. Virtuoso. There's a brand name. There's a plug. We like that. Thanks, Sam, for joining us, and we appreciate your time, and we'll have you back.
I love it.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Happy holidays.
Up next, winter salads on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. Tom Douglas here. Chef Terry's off today, but he did want me to mention. He actually texted me to mention, and I would have myself, but we just want to wish our best and our condolences to Jacques Pepin, whose wife Gloria passed this last week. And one of the highlights of my career is getting to know Jacques Pepin over the last 30 years. What a true blue guy he is. And he always loved being on the road, but he always loved going back home to Gloria. So here's to him. Here's to them, having had a fantastic life together, over 50 years married. And I wish him the best as he continues his path. There's so much to talk about, but one of the things that I've been doing in my classes here at Hot Stove is many classes I've been featuring winter salads. And Madeline, you went online and looked up a few winter salads. I have my own, but did you come across any that struck you?
You know, the New York Times Cooking had a really beautiful roundup. And the thing that I loved most about these salads, Tom, is they were so colorful.
Mm-hmm.
They were just beautiful. The big, bright reds and greens, radicchio and chicories and spinach and things like that. This one that I included here first was a marinated celery salad, actually, with chickpeas and Parmesan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. For some reason, my kids eat a ton of celery. It's completely useless.
Oh, my God. They're from Mars.
They're just weirdos. But they will devour any form of celery. Thankfully, it's basically just water. But I thought putting a little bit of celery might get them into eating some of these delicious salads. Anything with toasted chickpeas, I'm all about as well. And the saltiness of Parmesan, it just sounded delicious. So
when you say toasted chickpeas, are they oven roasted after they are blanched, or are they deep fried?
You know, I leave them out, just rinse them on. I rinse them out of the can, put them on a paper towel, and let them dry out a little bit, and then I roast them for about 10, 15 minutes in an oven.
Just like a roasted vegetable.
Yeah, a roasted vegetable. I put a little sumac on it, a little lime, salt.
Well, aren't you fancy?
Fancy. You know, it is inspired from our mutual love for Saltoro's up on 145th and Greenwood. Their little chickpea bar snack is my absolute favorite. A little squeeze squeeze of fresh lime, salt, and a little sumac. It's my favorite. So I toss those in any kind of salad, really. But recently, all the chicories, a little vinaigrette, makes it easy.
You know, you mentioned Saltoro's, and I worry for them because the folks that own it now just had bought it maybe a year ago from Greg Beckley, the owner that built it.
Yep.
And, you know, whenever you're starting a new business, you just have to be very, very careful. And, of course, all these shutdowns have not helped them at all. And I know they were making a good run of it in a to-go sense there for a while, but I've tried to go a couple of times, and it doesn't seem like they're doing to-go right now.
So. Yeah, I don't know what their current status is. I'll look it up before
Once you look it up there, because I love those guys. If you've never been, it's up on Greenwood, 143rd or so in Greenwood. And it's, you know, they're just nice people. They're all industry folks that have bought it. The chef and the lead waiter bought it from the owner, and we really want them to do well and be successful.
It looks like they are continuing curbside pickup for contactless takeout.
Okay.
They're offering their regular menu and some great wine specials and to-go cocktails. You know, they have that delicious burger. Yeah. I love their steak frites. Ooh.
You know what my favorite dish there is? The sea salt chicken.
Yeah.
And it doesn't travel as well as it does, like, sitting in the restaurant having it, because when you sit there at the bar and have it and you're watching the game or something, it comes out and the skin is super crispy.
Mm, so
and
good.
So when you travel with it, say, 15 minutes home, it does sog out a little bit. So, but it's still delicious. It's still salty and good.
Ooh, so good. I wish it
was. Winter salad. So, you're right, they are colorful, but we can make them as colorful as we want, right? You mentioned a couple of things, kind of reds and greens, but to me, winter salads really kind of come into their own when you start adding some things that maybe you're not used to adding to a salad. So I like to take core an apple or a pear, cut them into little bite-sized chunks, and roast those in the oven. Mm. So now I have a little apple component in my salad. Delicata squash or pumpkin kind of wedges that are roasted. And they really go well with an escarole or a black kale. Like a squash and kale salad is so beautiful with the dark Italian lacinato kale and then the beautiful bright orange pumpkin. Roasted carrots and beets. And don't forget, there's lots of kinds of beets out there. From the Goldens, I particularly like the Goldens because they don't taste like beets to me. There's something about red beets
masked,
I have never
masked
learned.
Beets.
Yeah, I've never learned to love red beets. But the golden beets I can handle. And they roast up beautifully. I don't generally roast beets like the candy stripers or things of that nature. I tend to go with the Goldens and try to find ones with beet greens. Because if you can get a nice bunch of beets and it has good fresh beet greens, just take the greens, separate them, right? Roast the bulbs, peel them with your fingers once they're roasted, and then the beet greens, right before you are ready to serve your salad, just give them a quick saute in olive oil and garlic, put them on your plate, and then put the sliced roasted beets that are golden on top of the dark sauteed beet greens, and you have a beautiful salad. So there's so many of those kind of little tricks to do.
Sure. I also think citrus, you know, is big in wintertime, so there were quite a bit of beautiful salads with big, bright grapefruits or orange slices, just a little brighten it up as well. I've saw a couple of those, again, also with beets. A lot of the combining of the citrus and the beet flavor is a nice combination.
It is. And if you want to make an entree salad out of it, let's say this is going to be your dinner, then I would take that citrus, that grapefruit, and make the supreme. So a supreme is when you cut through the little segments and you end up with just a wedge of lusciousness that has no pith or no nothing on it, right? So now I have my supremes of grapefruit. I kind of take an avocado and make maybe quarters out of the avocado and cut it into eight. So I've got chunks of avocado, now supremes of grapefruit. Then I'll take escarole or something of that nature, which is a lighter green, and then some radicchio, which is a darker red. But then I'm going to top the whole thing with either fresh crab or fresh shrimp or something of that nature to make a seafood salad.
That's perfect.
And you can... you could do that. If you wanted to go inexpensive, I know the grocery store I'm shopping at lately has had thawed squid.
Mm.
And so you do a quick, you know, clean on the thawed squid, slice it up into rings and tubes and tentacles and stuff, give it a quick poach, and now you've got a squid salad with that. The other thing I love to do with this is that when you have something sweet like a grapefruit, something fatty like the avocado and all this thing going on, I like to take olives and roast them or pan fry them. Right? Maybe even a little chorizo, some of that Spanish chorizo, just little nubbins, pan fry it, get it crispy, get the olives crispy, and then garnish your your grapefruit and avocado salad with these little bits of saltiness and lusciousness really does do a nice job of kind of bringing the whole salad together.
And it's nice because you don't have to cover it with cheese. You know, sometimes that cheese typically is that salt factor in these mm-hmm. salads, and going with the olive route or the chorizo route allows for all of our dairy-free listeners to enjoy those salads.
Exactly. Why not? Why not? You know, we're very well known at the Dahlia Lounge for our bread salad. And when I go to the grocery store these days, it seems to me, because everyone's shopping at the grocery, the bread department is ravaged. Every time, and there's got to be out there, there's got to be a lot of bread ends in somebody's freezer because they don't know what to do with them. Mm. And so just take those bread ends, the heels. I mean, it works with the whole loaf, but if you've got a bunch of this stuff you're not really sure what to do with, take those and soak them. Don't soak them, but, you know, dress them heavily with olive oil. Put them on a grill pan or on the grill on your stove or on your charcoal grill and give them a nice char. And then cut them up into reasonable bite-sized cubes. And now you've got the basis for a beautiful salad, right? A bread salad, panzanella salad. And I use, at the grocery store, you can find mozzarella in all different sizes. I use the little tiny balls of mozzarella. I use radicchio for bitterness and color. Fresh herbs. This is a great time for whole leaves of flat-leaf parsley, whole leaves of fresh basil, whole leaves of mint or tarragon, the soft kind of fine herbs, toss this all together, a little bit of olives. Now's the time. I mean, it's okay. Sun-dried tomatoes are a good product. Now's the time to use sun-dried tomatoes, right? They've been packed in olive oil at their peak of ripeness, and they make a beautiful, sweet bite within your bread salad. And then on top of that, you can choose to go several different directions, right? You can grill a steak and have a steak on top of your panzanella salad. You could put a piece of salmon on top. You can grill a chicken breast. Or you could go something as simple as go to the deli counter and get some copa or prosciutto or something, a nice thin slice of deli meat that you can pop right on top of your bread salad, and you've got a very not protein-heavy finish. Or just leave it off, right? Just finish with some Parmesan cheese and a lovely vinaigrette made from shallot mustard or whatever it is that you want to. Yum. We make a pesto vinaigrette, so... Always been one of the top sellers at Dahlia for 32 years now.
That's true. And your daughter's favorite, I believe, served it at her wedding.
I did. That was when she got married, she and Benjamin, when they got married, that was their entree. The bread salad was the base, and they chose three or four different proteins to top that I cooked on the wood fire. And it was a beautiful thing because you pass the bread salad, and then everyone could just take the protein that they wanted or none, right?
It was delicious.
As with people your age, there's a bunch of veg heads out there. And so we did grilled eggplants, too, for the top of that salad. So many ways to enjoy a winter salad, hearty, whether it's for a nap, whether it's for your entree. It's probably not the best salad, like a post-dinner salad. You know, certainly not a bread salad. Way too heavy. But I love that kind of thing. Up next, it's the Feast of Polenta. We have been working on this and selling this all week at our kitchen out in Ballard, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about it because you're not going to be able to buy it now probably, but I still love the idea of this dinner, and I just want to talk about where it came from, the history of the Feast of Polenta. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Hey, we're back in the kitchen. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas, and today we're talking about so many different things related to my history and passion and food. I wanted to spend a couple of minutes on a box that we're serving at the Sirius Takeout Kitchen right now. Probably too late to order it if you're listening to the show now, but it's called the Feast of Polenta. And Madeline, our producer's father and I were traveling through Italy many, many, many years ago. Probably when you were just a glimmer in his eye, or maybe not. I think you were just a couple years older, two or three. When did you guys move there for a bit?
We were there when I was about three or four, so mid-80s.
Mid-80s, so that's about the time we went over to see him. He was working at Gaia's Winery.
Yep.
And so you were three or four. pretty much the same brat that you are now.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Just more harassing old Italian construction workers in the streets of Barbaresco, I believe, and yeah. Singing them Tomorrow from the movie Annie is Michael Tear's favorite memory. Them being thoroughly annoyed while they try to have a quiet lunch on the side of the street.
I sing that song often, you know, but I have the curmudgeon version. Mm. Have you heard my curmudgeon version?
No, what is it?
Tomorrow, tomorrow, there's always tomorrow. Unless you die today.
It's very, very 2020.
Very 2020. Yeah, that's my curmudgeon version. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Feast of the Polenta. And I distinctly remember traveling through Italy and with your dad and having polenta served on a rock table that we were in some restaurant. And it seemed gross at the time. But then, then when you ate it and you had the sugo, just a little fresh tomato sauce, and all the things like roasted mushrooms and roasted fennel and a little some sort of green, whether it was Tuscan kale or chard or something of that nature, it just spoke to us as a group, as people. We had never really experienced polenta that much. And it became a very hot item. Matter of fact, my opening menu at the Dahlia 32 years ago had polenta on it. Hmm. It became very hot. We used to serve it at Cafe Sport. It was just a dish that was all over the place. The only person in my household that would not eat it was my father-in-law, who grew up in an Italian immigrant family. And, you know, they were dirt poor, and polenta is what they had every day. And he swore that when he was when he could afford it, that he would never eat polenta again. Mm. Whether he liked it or not, he would never eat it again. It was a societal. It was like where you stood in society pressure to him. That was kind of interesting. But anyway, polenta, how do you make it? So there's so many choices out there. Have you we've had it at your house, yeah. Madeline, on your big granite table at one of our Christmas Eve dinners. To me, there's a couple of ways to go about it. One is if you're just in a hurry at home, buy the instant polenta. It's really just more finely ground. The big thing about it is you have to be careful when you add it to your boiling water because it wants to lump. It's right. So fine, it wants to lump.
What about if you're in a hurry, I've seen in the stores those blocks of already cooked polenta.
The tubes, right?
The
yeah.
tubes,
yeah.
right?
I mean, that's made right here in Seattle.
I believe
San
so.
San Geronimo Foods or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfectly fine, and it's just plain polenta.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, I don't think there's any preservatives in it. It's just the way it's packaged, and it's perfectly good product. I just pan fry that.
Right, you slice it up thin and like pancake styles,
yeah,
little
exactly.
cornmeal pancakes. Delicious. Okay.
Just pan fry it, and it's just 100% polenta. It's just a corn, right? And so for me, I like the long version of polenta when I have the opportunity. We made it for this box, the long version, our dinner box series. And so what you do there is if you're going to start your polenta in chicken stock or cream or something, it's going to take much longer to hydrate. Mm. There's something about the fat in stock or the viscosity of stock that doesn't want to go into the corn very fast. So it might take, for a coarse polenta in water, it might take 20 minutes for it to cook. In stock or cream or milk, it might take an hour and 20 minutes on low to cook and get hydrated all the way through. Now, is it different? Yeah. The polenta that you cook in chicken stock or in water is very plain. And then if you want, like if it's nice and thick when it's hydrated, then you just add some cream and cheese and butter and you kind of go from there. If you want to cook it in the milk or the stock or with the cream, I just cook it low and slow. It's kind of one of those things that kind of sits there and bubbles, and sometimes it actually bubbles enough to spit at you and burn your skin. You know how thick tomato sauce does
sure.
that? Well, polenta's the same thing.
Spits at you.
It wants to spit at you. And so just be careful with that. And then once my little ground kernels are hydrated, I want to season. And so I season with all the different things. It's a great time to unload your cheese drawer. Mm. I keep a drawer in my fridge that has all my cheeses in it. And so the soft rind cheeses, I take the rind off, and now I just got the center, and I pop that in. A little extra Chev, pop that in. Reggiano Parmesan ends, pop that in. You know, grate them, pop it in. Extra Beecher's Flagship, maybe you just have a nubbin left, pop it in, you know, grate it and pop it in. Even pepper jack or some trashy little cheese, you know, that you have a little bit left. This is a good time to use it up and make your big, creamy, cheesy pot of polenta. Super good. Once that's done, and it's really done when it's, you feel like it's done, it's a, you know, a thickness that you're comfortable with, then you're ready to go in any multiple directions that you want.
Yeah,
do you have a favorite?
It's a blank canvas.
Yeah.
That's the best part of polenta.
A little bit like mashed potatoes, but we don't think of mashed potatoes as kind of an entree, whereas I do with polenta.
Yeah.
I think it as a basis of an entree.
Yeah. My favorite is the mushroom pan roast. I love just the creaminess that the mushrooms kind of interject into the polenta, a little bit of herbs and Parmesan, and that's my favorite. Similar to, I guess, how I love like a risotto. You know, it's the same concept, but I like little, just perfectly crispy mushrooms on top. I also love the meatballs, though. I know that's your favorite.
Yeah. Well, I think the risotto is a good analogy. People often use risotto as the base of an entree, and the polenta is the same thing that we don't really think about it. In the States, I think we often think about maybe pasta being that base, but you can use polenta or risotto kind of as a base anywhere you might use pasta.
Yeah.
So I do. I love the meatballs. I love Italian sausage, kind of hard charred over top of my polenta. I like it with tomato sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I like a little sugo or just a plain little tomato basil sauce with my polenta. I think it's a nice acidic thing to go against that kind of rich, creamy, cheesy scenario, which is why obviously, spaghetti and meatballs, or, you know, with tomato sauce with cheese on top is the same thing, you know, same idea. So, but polenta, to me, is one of those things that you just kind of have to love. You have to learn to love it. It's just a side dish if you don't learn to think, to kind of cook it in a low and slow kind of way and enjoy the process.
Yeah.
It's just something you're serving with a pork chop.
And it's hearty. You know, I think one of my favorite memories traveling through Italy and hiking and doing a little bit of hikes up in the Alps and things like that, you would finally reach these destination shacks.
Mm-hmm.
That people could stock up on a little bit of water, some beer, and a couple glasses of wine, but their menu would truly have 29 different dishes of polenta.
Of polenta.
Polenta and mushrooms, polenta and sausage, polenta and anything. And, you know, all the hikers loved it because it would just sustain them for so long. It was just so delicious. And you think, you know, you have to schlep all that food up there to these places. So I think polenta was the perfect fit for those guys.
I'm curious if we were to get a dietitian on the show to see what your body can extract from that hardened corn. Because, you know, sometimes I've been told that you can't get much out of polenta physically.
And yep.
I'm curious about that. I bet that's wrong.
We can ask Carly. She's coming up at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah, let's ask her. Will you remember?
I will remember, yep.
Okay, let's ask Carly. And her new book, The Nutritionist's Kitchen, put her on the spot. Coming up in our second hour, we'll chat with Rosie Mays about her favorite Southern recipes this holiday season. Plus, we'll learn about winter gardening from my wife, Jackie. Where should your garden be at this point? And cookbook author and nutritionist Carly Knowles is here. She'll also stay for our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society, so stay with us on Cairo 97.3 FM. Welcome back to hour number two of the Hot Stove Society show. Chef Terry's taking the day off. I'm on flying solo with Madeline, our producer. My name's Tom Douglas, a chef owner of several restaurants here in Seattle. The ones that are open right now, Sirius Pie downtown, Seatown Restaurant, the north end of the Pike Place Market, are serving outdoors with heaters. And, of course, Sirius Takeout out in Ballard, which is where the Sirius Pie and our Dinner Box series happens. If you go to TomDouglas.com, you can find out more about that, especially our polenta box happening this weekend. So delicious. Coming up in this hour, cookbook author and nutritionist Carly Knowles is going to join us with her new book, The Nutritionist's Kitchen. Our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge is going to wrap up the show. My wife, Jackie, is going to be here to talk about your winter gardening, where it should be, and how you should be prepping for the spring. And we're going to talk to Rosie Mays here real quick about some Southern recipes that she is very fond of. And let's just jump right on the phone. Sean, do you have Rosie on the line for us?
Hi, Rosie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Thanks so much for being on the show today. We're excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here.
You know, Tom, I saw Rosie's picture with her cute son on the cover of Seattle Child magazine.
Uh-huh.
She cooks a lot with her kids at home, I believe, and I thought she would be a great addition to the show to talk about her background as sort of a home cook here in Seattle. You know, sort of learning all of her fun Southern recipes, and I included some here we can talk about, but I thought maybe Rosie would be the best person to give her story on the phone here.
Absolutely. Rosie, why don't you tell us your story, and then we'll get into some of your favorite recipes.
Okay, so I'm Rosie, born and raised here in Seattle, Washington. My family has Southern roots. They came from Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to be exact. I started off on YouTube. I'm also a blogger. And I am a cookbook author.
Wow.
I know. Busy.
Busy woman.
She's a busy mom and a mom. Even which
yeah, that's
teaching.
My first title, actually.
Most important. I love it.
You know, I missed out on being a dad early on in my career. I was running restaurants, and Jackie was forced into the role of being the mom and the kid. And, oh, man, that's hard work.
It is. I'm also a homeschool mom, too, my dad. So
yeah, it's the 2020 yeah. COVID life. Should be a series.
Oh, well, yeah, I was doing homeschool before that.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, it's been busy.
So tell us about some of your favorite recipes that you grew up with and that you're continuing to bring through your family. We talk all the time about don't let the recipe box die with you, because when you do that, when your recipes go, so does your family history and lore. So tell me about your smoked oxtail recipe and maybe how that reflects your life growing up and what you're going to teach your kid.
So as far as my smoked oxtail recipe, that is actually something that I just decided to try on the fly. When we cook, especially my family, like to season certain things like collard greens, maybe cabbage and other southern dishes, we use smoked meat, such as maybe ham hocks and other things like smoked turkey. And since we are all oxtail lovers in my family, I just thought that it would be cool to just incorporate that instead of using the usual ham hocks and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I just decided to try something new, and luckily for me and my family, it worked.
what makes it special?
To be honest with you, the fact that it's oxtails and I incorporate into everything. So my son, he loves oxtails. That's like his favorite, well, one of his favorite things. He's not big on the smoked ham hock.
Uh-huh.
And so
do you cook it long enough that it just falls off the bone?
So I do smoke it for a long time. And then when you put it into like greens, you're going to pretty much braise it until it falls off the bone.
Delicious.
Sounds really good right now.
No, I'm
I know you also have a delicious southern cornbread dressing. I was looking at that online even during my Thanksgiving research because I saw some of those delicious cornbread dressings. Tell us about that one.
So for the cornbread dressing, I have a lot of different ways, but for the one that you're talking about, I like to start off using my homemade cornbread. And I like to make it a day before so it can kind of dry out. But sometimes, you know, we're all forgetful. We don't always remember to make it the day before. So sometimes I have to actually make it the day of. But when I do, I cook it just a little longer so it can kind of dry out. And then I add it my seasonings and turkey and other good stuff like onions and peppers, depending on my mood. Because sometimes I just like to try stuff on the fly and just add different things. But
that sounds delicious.
My mouth is watering. I'm sorry. But yeah, the southern dressing is definitely a family favorite, and a lot of my readers really love that one as well.
When you make a baked candied yam, I see that's one of your recipes too. I have my own version of that where I kind of saute the yams in duck fat, and then I get them nice and crispy, and then I deglaze them right at the very last second before I serve them with a little bit of maple syrup. What's your secret to candied yam?
My secret is actually I use ginger into my candied yam to add warmth. So that's probably a lot of people don't use that, but once you try my recipe, you're going to want to. I like to use ground ginger, and it does. It adds lots of flavor, the warmth. Of course, I use sugar, cinnamon, nutmeg, and a lot of butter.
That's
I know you said you use duck fat, and now I'm thinking I have to try that. But I definitely use a lot of butter into the yams, and I always make sure that I use the red garnet yams.
Uh-huh.
Those are my favorites.
Those are the favorite. The duck fat is one of those things that lives in my freezer, and I pull it out whenever I'm making something crazy, like a potato latke or, you know, candied yams or something where I want that kind of umami flavor, that something that you don't really know what it is, but it has an unctuousness about it.
I got to try that. I got to get my hand on some duck back.
Now, it's my understanding you're a crock pot pro. I only have 1 minute, but do you have a favorite crock pot or slow cooker recipe that you want to share?
My slow cooker oxtails. I said, y'all, I love oxtails. So I would go with my slow cooker oxtails because once you're done with that, it's definitely falling off the bone. Like, you really don't, not to be greedy, you don't need a fork. You just pick it on up and eat it, and it's just, yeah, to die for. Very tender.
Yum.
That's my favorite, but I also have, like, a ton of others, but we don't have a whole lot of time to go through that list.
Okay, Rosie. Well, if you want to learn more about Rosie's recipes and learn more about how she does what she does, go to visit iHeartRecipes.com and look for Rosie's page there. So that sounds like fun. I'm going to do that myself because I haven't cooked a mean oxtail in quite a while.
All of the recipes are just mouthwatering. You'll go to her site and see all these beautiful pictures, and it makes you quite hungry. So we appreciate all your insight and being on the show today, Rosie. We're going to have you back.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right, coming up next, it's my wife, Jackie the Farmer. She's going to talk to us about winter at Prosser Farm and what maybe you should be looking for in your own garden this time of year. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Hey, it's nice to be back in the Hot Stove Kitchen here in downtown Seattle. I'm Tom Douglas, getting ready to be joined by my wife, Jackie. We're going to talk about winterizing your garden and where to go with that, what your garden should look like now, what seed companies you should be thinking about ordering from, because seeds are going fast. Like last year, everyone was caught a little bit by surprise how fast people were selling out of seeds because people were sent home and they had nothing to do but plant a garden when they had the space. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I wanted to answer a question that we got here on the radio show, and I know Jackie has been in sourdough hell because she's taking on sourdough projects. Jackie, we had the question about grain mills for our KitchenAid mixer. And there's a couple that we sold here when we were selling things at Hot Stove. One was the Mock Mill, which is for KitchenAid, M-O-C-K-M-I-L-L. And the other is the actual KitchenAid mill, which we like the best, and it's about $100, and you don't really do things like coffee beans or anything kind of oily or wet in there, but for dry grains like the wheat berries that we ground at home in our spice grinder would work great in that. So I just wanted to tell our listeners that the KitchenAid grain mill is what we would recommend. Yes, they are our sponsors here at the Hot Stove, but it's also, when we looked it up to see how it was rated, it's also the highest rated online, too. So if you're looking for a cool Christmas present for your KitchenAid, that would be a nice one to get. So.
And, Tom, I also want to get go ahead, Jackie, sorry.
I was going to say, or for one of those people that have dove down the sourdough rabbit hole.
Yeah, like you.
It's perfect. Yeah, I know.
Jackie, you want to go for a walk? No, I got to work my starter. Jackie, you want to go get lunch at the faux spot? No, I've got to do my bread bake. Jackie, you want to have
it's
a little
ridiculous.
Champagne before dinner? No, I've got to
flip my dough.
I have to feed Betty. I have to feed Betty all the time.
Jackie has named her sourdough Betty, so she's fine. I like Betty.
I love it. I do want to, Tom, quickly give a shout out to listener Guile from Kirkland. You know, he would kindly sent you a note. We were talking about the burr grinders.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he did say he was listening to our show and mentioned your search, Tom, for a good, well-built home burr grinder. And he spent the last 10 days after listening to this show researching exhaustively. He's a retired Boeing engineer with 35 years of experience, and he's a good judge at building quality. And so he found your fellow's old burr grinder that we sent your way, and you picked it up, so you're going to get ready to use it. But we wanted to give him a shout-out and thank him for his exhaustive research.
Well, half of that is true. I did read his note. I did buy the one that he had said that he liked the best. It was the best made. And I found it on the Nordstrom website, of all places.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I've ordered it, and I have to pick it up. It's been 10 days now, and it's still sitting over there at 6th and Pike or wherever Nordstrom is over there, and I still have to drive by and pick it up.
All right.
But I will mention it was $300.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise, it better be good.
Ouch. Yeah. Ouch.
Okay, Jack, it's time to winterize the farm. And I know it's a little bit past time. You've been working on that for a month. But
yeah.
Tell people what
we're pretty winterized.
Tell people what their garden should look like now and what you're thinking about when it comes to seeds for the future. Your ground cover should be in and have grown in a bit so that before the first freeze,
correct,
you want your ground cover kind of fresh and ready to go. What are you doing now with a winter garden?
With the winter garden now, not a lot. We have done all of the above. Ground cover needs to go in before it starts freezing and stuff. In Seattle, you could probably still put ground cover in at this point in time and get enough growth on it because it doesn't get quite as cold as it does over here. We are at the moment at about 28 degrees and completely socked in with icy fog, which is not so pretty.
It seems like it's been about a week of that over there in Prosser.
I know. It's actually been like 10 days straight, I guess, according to everybody here. So it's pretty, it's getting very depressing. All your plants, your tomatoes, peppers, all those kind of things should be, you know, cut back at least. You know, if you haven't pulled them out of the ground completely, I leave my plant roots and stuff in the ground over here because we have so much wind that it helps hold the soil in over the winter time. And then I pull them out in the spring right before I get ready to turn the soil and replant. But it just depends on how much, you know, I also have 3,000 tomato plants. So
yeah,
that's different than if you only have a couple. If you have a lot of leaves, falling leaves and stuff in your yard and stuff, they make a perfect mulch on top of your garden bed. Nice to surround some of your more tender plants with those.
Do you use those whole or do you grind those first?
I use them whole. Okay. I just put them on. They'll deteriorate over the winter time. You'll probably have to rake off some of it in the spring and stuff, but a lot of it will disintegrate and stuff and mulch itself up. And they form a nice mat over some more tender plants, which mm-hmm. is great.
How do you keep them from blowing away? Do you put a little fencing around them and let that hold it in?
You can put a little fencing. You can lay, you know, just like a cloth over the top of them if you want. Here, we just put on a good layer of, you know, 6 or 7 inches. We have a lot of maple trees in on the property here, so we have a lot of leaves. So we can put a pretty thick mulch over the top of our raised bed. And it just really helps to keep them protected. I put them over the strawberries, put them over, you know, I've raised beds full of herbs. They make a perfect mulch over that. And there's just enough of them. Once they get a little bit wet, they sort of mat themselves down and they won't blow away so much because they've got enough weight to them. But
I've seen you do that with hay also.
Yes, with hay also. I like the leaf better and the leaf mulch is a little bit more nutritious for the soil, but both work really well.
All right. I know that in the past, when we had a bunch of chefs, you would meet with them at this time of year to determine what seeds to buy for the spring. Well, you know, what did they like?
I miss all our chefs.
I know. What did they like from when you grew them this year? Yeah. What would you change? What did we grow too much of or too little of? What seeds did you find that either sprouted or didn't sprout? You know, kind of going through all the right. ups and downs of the season in December to think about your plan for the spring, because you really do need a plan when you're starting seed from greenhouses.
Right. Yeah, I always try to have everything ordered by the end of December. So this would be the time that I would be meeting with chefs, as you said, go over things, and I'd work out my bed plan and the rotation plan for all the different beds. And then determine how much seed I needed to make that all happen and start ordering. And it's so fun because then you get to go through all the different catalogs and, you know, do I want this bean or that bean? Or do I want half of this bean and half of that bean? And it's really fun to figure out the rotation, I think, and what you can get in as an early crop and then put in as a later crop and then put in as your finished crop. But not so much ordering this year, unfortunately, but hopefully again soon.
Yeah.
I love going through the catalog, though. It's one of my favorite things. It's always, especially this time of year when it is a little dreary out, it just makes you think of summer and takes you away. It's like taking a little trip.
Yeah, exactly. It's like going south for the winter, but in your own living room.
Exactly.
We only have 30 seconds left, so tell me your favorite seed companies that our listeners should be kind of dialing up.
I buy a lot of seed from High Mowing, which is a
fully organic seed company. I think they do a really lovely job. They're based on the East Coast, but they have a lot of appropriate seeds for here in the Northwest. I also buy a lot of seeds from a company called Fedco, which does have organic and non-organic seed, but their catalog is just a hoot to read because there's a lot of little side stories in it, which is pretty awesome. And then for some of the specialty items, the Rose 7 seeds, they only have 7 or 8 different seeds available and stuff like that, but they are also a really fun catalog to look through.
Perfect. That's Jackie Cross, the lead farmer, a lovely bride of me over at Prosser Farm over in Prosser, Washington. So thanks so much, Jack.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Bye. Right. Bye. Up next, it's Carly Knowles and her new book, The Nutritionist Kitchen. And it's kind of, we wanted to kind of put these two segments together because it's also good to know what the most nutrition is that you can grow in your crop rather than, well, maybe not. I've got to remember to ask her that polenta question, too. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. I'm Tom Douglas. Terry's off today. Hopefully he'll be back with us by next week. Madeline, you invited Carly Knowles on not only to talk about her new book, but she's going to stay with us for the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. We just had Jackie, my wife, on, who's the farmer, and thinking about what we grow, oftentimes based on flavor and taste, but I don't know that we think a tremendous amount about the actual nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of production, flavor, taste, things like that. So I think it's great that you've invited Carly on to talk about her new book, The Nutritionist Kitchen.
Yeah.
And so what struck you?
You know, well, truthfully, we were talking earlier even about those bright colored salads. I mean, just the cover of her book alone has gorgeous rainbow colored vegetables. I was a big believer early on. I know our friend Pamela Hinckley was a student. Superfoods, mm-hmm. whole foods, you know, all these delicious, yeah. super nutrient rich foods that, you know, I still think of today. We had a couple great people sort of teach us about superfoods way back when, and they still live in my brain. So I was so excited to have Carly on because I think she's a wealth of information. You know, she's on the line and can tell us a little bit about her background, but I know she worked, you know, out all the way from Peru and learning about different types of experiences and how nutrients are affecting people from all over the world. So right. I think it'll be fun.
Well, we don't even need to have Carly. You've just told her whole story.
I know. <I'm> Carly, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. Can you give us your background?
Oh, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. And I'm just so excited to talk about this book. In a nutshell, I started as a fine art major in college. I had no nutrition or health background, but I decided it was time to see the world and do something outside of the box and use my art skills to teach kids and youth, mainly in a community in Peru, about health and hygiene. So I was going to put together the creative side of it to do some community outreach and education. And I traveled to Peru with a nonprofit, and I lived there for some time in this community, and what an experience it was. Yeah, it was very off the grid. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I actually had just this wild epiphany about food and how important and valuable our food, specifically nutrition, was. And unfortunately, it was affecting myself and my volunteers, but also the community and the kids even. It was impacting their vision is what I saw directly, I'm sure, along with many other things, that they had a very limited diet. And unfortunately, many of them were vitamin A deficient, which causes permanent blindness. Hmm. And you can see it in some tissue that grows over the cornea. And that really struck me. And I started doing my own personal research on nutrition and that concept of food as medicine, how we use our food to help us heal, restore, prevent different disease states. And I was blown away by what I learned because it can be pretty straightforward if we have that education. And that's really what inspired me to get my master's degree in nutrition is I think we need to know these things. It's so, you know, there's so much info out there and it's kind of complicated. Science is not always straightforward and simple. So I wanted to create a book that helped bring that, you know, back down to earth and create a palatable resource for people to learn about those concepts so that I can go out there and help as many people as I can avoid some issues or help heal, you know, something they're already battling.
Such an interesting thing. You know, we did similar work at Food Lifeline when it came to foods that even people that were hungry were picking up. Instead of just picking up whatever someone mm-hmm. donated, we worked with, I believe it was Kaiser or Blue Cross Blue Shield, one of those, on coming up with a plan for people that had diabetes, say, and what foods at the food bank mm-hmm. should they be picking up to help cure their issues. And it ended up, you can actually prescribe as medicine food.
Absolutely. Absolutely, right? And isn't that kind of, I mean, it's kind of a wild concept, but it's something we do every day. Many of us eat 3 meals, 4 or 5 meals a day, sometimes more, sometimes less, but we all eat. We have that in common, and it's something that we do often enough that if we use it like a prescription and we treat it like medicine, we actually can have a really powerful influence on our health. And the opposite, you know, when we don't see it that way, we can sometimes do some damage, and hopefully not irreversible, but sometimes it is. And so it's nice to be, I really enjoy working in this field. I find it really rewarding, and I just love teaching people about food and that concept of food as medicine.
You know, one of the things I love about your book is that it doesn't, you know, so often we think about nutrient-dense foods being all piled into a blender and made into a shake. And you are, well, it's true. I mean, mm-hmm. it's the way a lot of people think about it day to day. Or they buy ones that are pre-made. But your book really talks about real food and thinking about it in the same way as being nutritious, but having sitting down to a real meal. What are some of your favorites?
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. I, you know, as a dietitian working with patients or my friends and family, you say you're a dietitian and you people get afraid. Mm. They're very afraid, or they are embarrassed, or they think you hate food. They think you're the food police. So to be, to have you say that you understand and recognize that I'm actually talking about real food, and it might even be delicious, which I think it is. Mm-hmm. The recipes in here, that's a big honor to me. So some of my favorite recipes in this book, there's a coconut curry red lentil stew that comes together in a flash. It's a great weeknight meal, and it's super flavorful, and it has that delicious turmeric that we're learning so much about. I have a homemade nut butter. I talk about how to make your own nut or seed butter mm-hmm. or a combination of the two, and that's a really fun one that kind of blows people away. We're so used to buying that, you know, in a store, but it's very simple to make at home. So that's another favorite. I just made chocolate and chai spiced granola, recently for our family and some friends who did some really generous yard work for us in the rain. Yeah. I, gave them a big jar of granola. So that's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. There's so much. And then you go on to talk about, in your book a little bit about like the value of using a whole chicken instead of chicken parts, because in my mind part of nutrition is getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food dollar. And so tell us about that a little bit.
I have a recipe for roasting a whole chicken. It is one of the simplest recipes. Literally, you put salt and pepper on a quality whole chicken, you roast it, you eat it, and then you save the bones and any other inedible parts, and you create basically a bone broth. Some of us know that as stock as well, but you use all the parts of the animal. And that not only saves us money, because now instead of buying that chicken stock or that bone broth, you have it. And if you know, those things aren't necessarily inexpensive, especially bone broth.
Oh,
you know,
God,
it's all the rage these days, mm-hmm. right? And it's $9, you know, $7 to $10 really for like a small, pretty small container. So you save a lot of money doing that. But also there's nutrients inside of those bones. There's minerals, you know, there's fat, healthy fat And to bring that out into a stock or into this bone broth adds another layer of nutrition. And to me, that's the definition of using your food as medicine. You know, it's also because it tasted great and we loved it. We had it for dinner. So check, check, check. But then you actually get some more nutritional value out of it. So that's kind of that next step for me.
Yeah. And when you think about a chicken, you know, a 3-pound chicken is probably less than $5 or around $5. And then you go and see maybe 3/4 of a pound or 1-pound box of banquet fried chicken in the freezer department, and it's $7.99 or $8.99, and and it's just got nothing for you like that 3-pound chicken does, and what it gives you even after you've eaten the meat off the bones.
Totally, and you bring up such a great point. What we're paying for when we buy it all, you know, pieced out, is someone else's labor, right, to do that for us. And that's worthy, of course, of paying more. And when all it takes is a lesson on how to carve your own chicken or, you know, poultry of any kind. We just had Thanksgiving. So how to carve a turkey. You save a ton of money, but you do have to spend a little bit more time. And that's where I find that some of us aren't willing to do that work. But I try in this book to show you with these like little ways. I call them tweaks, like little tweaks to what you're maybe used to doing. You can just amp up the nutritional value and save some money and have some delicious food on hand.
Perfect.
So that seems like a win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, our guest has been Carly Knowles. Her new book is called The Nutritionist's Kitchen. And I would really suggest that you read it from cover to cover. I don't often say that about cookbooks, but I think it's a philosophy of how to think about your food on your dinner table. And so, Carly, you're going to stay with us for the next segment of Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. But I also want to get you in our Rolodex, which is an old-fashioned term anymore, isn't it? Rolodex. So that when we have nutritional questions, we can just hop on the line with you because we love having you on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Tom. I would love it. Yes, please. That sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back in the Hot Stove Society kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society show. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, and it's brought to you by Rub with Love, handcrafted, versatile rub and sauces and spices and mustards, and all made by me. He had a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Get an early jump on your holiday shopping and send friends and family around the country our Rub with Love gift packs. We have a full selection of flavors and combinations that are perfect for your favorite home cook. Just go to tomdouglas.com/shop or go to Bartels or go to my buddy Stan or go to Amazon or go anywhere. Go to your grocery store for our rubs. Madeline, what's our prize today and who's going to win it?
All right, today we have a salmon rub, a spicy Tokyo rub, and a seafood rub, all on a Tom Douglas signature-designed cedar plank, complete with perimeter well that captures juices and sausage while grilling. Can you believe that?
You sound like it's less mega deal.
That's going to be my next phase, is we're going to have some wonderful game show hosts on here. But we are playing for listener Diane Jackson. She will win this prize when our favorite nutritionist, Carly, kicks your butt.
Oh, that's nice. That's really sweet. Carly, I wanted to ask you a quick question because we promised earlier in the show we were talking about polenta as a main course and what's the nutritional value. And I wasn't sure that our bodies get a lot of nutrition from that corn. What do you know about that?
Yeah, corn's a little controversial. I'll start by saying that. Some people are in the camp that corn is nutritious and some say it's not. I'll just keep it neutral in the middle and I'll say A, polenta is delicious, and B, it's full of fiber. There's fiber. We have a little vitamin C. There's some thiamine, which is a B vitamin, and some folate. And there's a couple other nutrients in there as well, magnesium, potassium, but they start to go down in their content. So I think as a part of a balanced diet, fabulous. You know, if you were eating polenta for every meal, every day, we might need to talk.
Good answer. All right, let's get going on our trivia.
All right. Well, because our beloved Thierry isn't here today, Carly, you will be up first. I have about 6 questions here, and then Tom, you have another 6 questions. So I have arrange the questions a little bit for our Whole Foods, some super nutrient trivia here for Carly. So excited to have you on. All right, your first question. What do blueberries have over strawberries?
Blueberries are full of antioxidants.
That is correct, if you wanted to go with
that. And that's it.
Yes, they have
perfect.
More antioxidants. Blueberries have some of the most antioxidants per serving of any food, if I believe that's correct. There, you validated my question, so I appreciate it.
Great.
All right. What is the only U.S. state to grow coffee beans? I actually didn't know this.
I thought coffee beans had to be grown within 10 degrees of the equator.
Well, that's a good hint for Carly.
Okay, so now you've given me a hint here. Mm-hmm. So let's go. I'm going to say Texas.
Texas is a good guess, but it's actually Hawaii. Yeah, which, again.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. And I've had delicious coffee from there. Come on,
Carly. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What's good about Greek-style yogurt?
Greek yogurt has more protein than
the typical
yogurt.
Yeah, well done. More protein. It's made with straining the watery whey, which makes it a lot thicker than regular.
My favorite part is Carly could go on for 10 minutes on each of these subjects.
I know.
Not coffee, though, and my native Portland roots are upset right now.
Nope. All right. Well, this one's kind of a gimme, too, because Tom brought it up at the beginning, but I was going to say, polenta is made from what grain?
From corn.
Correct.
Is corn a grain or grass?
You know, and that's what kind of threw me off. It's funny. It's one of those things some people call a grain, some people call a vegetable. Mm-hmm. Let's just call it a grain. Sure.
Let's call it a correct answer, Tom. That's what we're going to call it.
Yeah, that's what we're calling it.
All right. The Netherlands is famous for which Dutch cow's cheese?
Gouda.
That is correct. Perfect. Yeah, he
answered that.
I love when they throw cheese at the wall and they get it right. That's ridiculous.
Okay.
You
got out of five here. Your last question, true or false? A half can of baked beans has more fiber than an apple.
You're trying to confuse me with the baked beans part and the half a can part, but we're really just talking about beans and apples. I mean, they're both fiber fueled. So I'm going to go with true.
That is correct. It has about 10 grams of fiber, which is almost 3 to 4 times more than an apple, according to the World Wide Web. All right, Carly, you
fabulous.
Did very well. Yay. I believe our listener, Diane Jackson, is thrilled. We'll see how Tom does. Tom, are you ready?
Well, I'm just saying, Carly fits in a long line of people in their first time on the show, just kicking our butts.
That's true. I know. Kind of generous that way.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, your first question. What is the main ingredient in mince pie?
Okay, so I'm going to say dried fruit.
That is correct.
Yes.
Well done. That was good for you. Okay, your favorite subject. Which fish has the healthiest fats?
The fattiest fish.
The fattiest fish, the healthiest fats.
The healthiest fats, so the omega-3s. Which fish? There's a lot of fish in the sea. It seems a bit... I'm going to say mackerel or herring.
Oh, it's your salmon.
Salmon's got more fat than mackerel? I don't think so.
Healthiest fat, because salmon is really good because it's rich in EPA and DHA omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay.
So
okay. I was just thinking fat percentage of the fish.
No, sorry. Healthiest fat.
All right.
That's a hard one.
Thanks,
Carly. If I
were
doing this, I'd give you half a point. Yeah.
Carly's not welcome back on the show.
Dang.
Okay, this is interesting. I learned this today. Canola is an abbreviation for what?
Out of oil.
That's a very good guess. It's Canadian oil. Canola was an original trademark of the name Rapeseed Association of Canada, and the name was a condensation of can in Canada and ola, meaning oil, low acid.
I think I got it pretty darn correct. What I think is they were very correct that rapeseed is not a good name for oil.
Yeah, bad branding on their part.
Yeah.
It was from Canada.
Yeah, good. Okay, got it.
Yeah. All right, about how many espresso beans are required to make one espresso? 22, 42, or 62?
22.
42.
That's a lot of beans.
42.
Considering they're picked by hand?
Yeah.
Think about that.
Second to last question. Which is least likely to lower your blood pressure? Cantaloupe, whole grain bread, or spinach?
I'm going to say cantaloupe.
It's actually whole grain bread.
Yeah.
Not lower your blood pressure.
That's why we have a nutritionist on the show and not me.
The average United States adult drinks about how many cups of coffee each year, Tom? 100, 400, or 900?
Well, if it's me, I drink 2 cups a day, 365 days a year, so I'm going to say 900.
I'm surprised by this. It's actually only 400. Only the average adult only drinks.
Well, then I'm not the average American. Wow.
Think of what you think about maybe 1 cup of coffee and a day.
Piece of pie, scuba ice cream. That's what I think about.
I called my mother yesterday. She was doing a puzzle, and she goes, "I'm sipping on tea with a little bit of rum."
At 9 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. So, well, Carly,
it's
I think
the pandemic.
Exactly. It is a pleasure to have you, Carly. You have won the prize, our lovely Rub with Love gift pack for listener Diane Jackson, and Tom will ship it to her. That's his losing prize.
That's my losing prize. If you want to be part of the show like Carly, you can join the community on Facebook at HotStoveSocietyRadioShow.com. You're listening to Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by our team, Madeline Pennington and Amy Richardson. Sound and production by Sean McFadden. And our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of our Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.